It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here in Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And we have a special guest for you this hour. It's Wendy McElroy. Now, Wendy, I'm going to try and introduce... Wendy, I got you there?
Yes, you do.
You know, I to do an introduction for you is like, it's like, it'd take me an hour. Just to introduce all the stuff that you... let me give you kind of my sense of Wendy McElroy, and you can help me out here, okay? Wendy McElroy, beautiful woman, happily married, nice husband, lives at the end of a gravel road in Canada, far away from the man as you can get, and all of a sudden you got all of these opinions on the how, I guess, the word feminist is attached to you a great deal because you're advocating for the freedom of women in all things, but it's more libertarian, freedom-oriented kind of mentality that you have towards everything. It's like you are a woman with an opinion about everything.
Well, yes, that's a fair assessment. I think yes.
And your opinion?
An anti-feminist, because I believe that men should be equal to women. And at this point, if you are really for equality, what you have to be for is for men's rights.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I knew that. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me coming from you. But you find a lot of your stuff. You know, we put links to a lot of your stuff up on today's archive. You go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see today's afternoon show up there for the 13th. And we have Wendy McElroy as our second-hour guest, and you'll see all of these articles that just from Lou Rockwell, how popular you are over there. And we constantly have your stuff up there. And I remember when I first contacted you in last week, heck, I can't even remember what the original reason was I called you. But I started going through all the stuff. I go, now, what was the story that got me that I wanted to talk to Wendy? I go, heck, all of these. I think one of the big things I wanted to talk was, yeah, I can't even remember. It's probably eminent domain. You had some recent thing on what was going on there. And then there was so much stuff. But I tell you what, looking all of the stuff that you've written on the war, on civil rights, on sexual freedoms for women, you know, the right to pornography, to be in pornography. Yeehaw! You know what? I don't own my body. I mean, what, you know, so these kind of things get you a lot of attention, but they are all around a central theme. The government's gotten too intrusive. And from your perspective in Canada, where do you think we're going?
It's interesting because being Canadian, about 20 years ago, because I lived in the States for so long, and I love the United States. I chose to live in the United States. Like Ayn Rand says, you know, I chose to be American. You know, what's your excuse? You were just born there. I went down and I chose to live in the United States, and I know more about American history than I know about Canadian history, even though I was born here, because I just really do believe that it did something right, that it had a spark of freedom, a spark of individualism that really just blazed, and so I don't speak in a bashing way when I say that things have changed so dramatically in the last 10 years. I used to think Canada was kind of the equivalent of the States, but kind of socialized in certain ways and maybe freer in others, because now I'm very happy to be up here because I see the United States just turning into a police state.
And well, how is it different? Let me ask you this.
Yes.
You have Eastern and Western Canada. Okay, what part of Canada are you in?
Ontario.
Okay, so you have Eastern and Western Canada, and you have the different kind of mindsets. You know, Alberta and so on over that area, you're kind of, you know, a little bit more freedom-oriented, Arizona-y kind of, you know, leave us alone. You got Quebec over in the east. That's more of the socialized. And I remember there was a secessionist movement back in the day where Quebec was wanting to secede, and I think a lot of other people was like, go, man. Take it. You know, knock yourself out. But the... they're probably glad Western Canada stayed there for the resources and the innovation and entrepreneurial spirit that allows them to fund all their socialism. So the mindset there, is it kind of homogenized into one thing? Before I ask my next question, I need to know, are they kind of homogenized into one philosophy, or are they still kind of split?
Oh, no. Canada probably is more of a mosaic than anything else. For one thing, you have the French Canadians, and it's such a mosaic that, I mean, I don't think Americans understand Canada, and I'm not touting Canada. You know that I'm an anarchist and that I'm not touting any government, yay government. You know, they're all the same in kind, but they have a lot of differences in degree. And in Canada, for example, the whole of Quebec, which is a very large part of Canada, both in population and geographically, is under civil law rather than common law, a totally different form of law than you find anywhere else in North America. It derives from the French tradition, and I won't get technical, and or if you want me to, I will.
Please, we got time. You know, give us a learning.
Okay, civil law basically, common law basically looks at evolves precedents from rules from precedents. Civil law basically goes by hard and fast rules and applies them to cases. So they're basically antagonistic in terms of their basic approach to law. I don't know whether one is more just than the other. In some cases, I look at civil law and for example, things like civil contempt, where right now in North America, where deadbeat dads are being thrown in jail for basically a debtor's prison, and when they do not pay support payments, they go into civil court, and civil court judges throw them in jail for contempt, which of the court orders to pay support, just doesn't exist in civil law. It's a common law tradition. So that's one very small example, but I hope it illustrates that in Canada there's a mosaic, and in Quebec, civil law rules, where in the rest of Canada, common law rules.
Well, Ontario is it's like Great Lakes area, you know, north of Michigan and stuff, right?
Yep.
So you're kind of influenced. I mean, you're probably getting, you know, Detroit television stations or something. You know, how Americanized is Ontario?
Oh, you know, for Christmas we actually cook turkeys. No, it's very. If you were to come up here, in many ways, it would be indistinguishable from being
okay.
In
so that kind of gives me answer my question.
And
in your area,
I get CNN. I get in some sense it's more interesting because we also get British TV.
You're infected. Foreign. That's my point. Okay,
yeah.
So we get Canada kind of at least is aware of our culture and our pop culture and, you know, all our propaganda and so on. So I look at Canada as I grew up. I graduate high school in 79. I'm born in 61. I'm senior citizen of the X generation. I just come into my formative years, serious relationships, getting married and everything. It's our early 80s. It's Reagan. It's a Cold War's amping up. We have Moscow Olympics boycott, Iran hostage crisis, all this kind of stuff. And Canada was where all the Vietnam veterans said, you know, we don't want to play anymore. We're going over here. And Canada, welcome open arms, and we'd be good. And now, you know, do we look at Canada that way as kind of a bastion, a home base, an escape, a place where we can go? Or now they're going to round you up too, kind of like, you know, Steve Cubby kind of thing and marijuana dealer. So, I mean, how infiltrated and influenced are they by things like Janet Napolitano? Homeland Security has sent a memo to the prime minister and they're under our thumb now. I mean, just how much control is there from U.S. policy to Canada?
A great deal. A great deal. Canada is very influenced by the States, not only culturally, but, you know, you're our biggest trade partner, and that's a huge financial, economic influence. you flex a lot of muscle. On the other hand, Canada is its culture, and I don't want to be pro-Canada, anti-United States. I would rather criticize the United States in terms of you know, whatever other nation.
Wendy, that's not my point. The reason I want to do this and get this, because we got plenty of time, you know, and we're coming up with a break here. But, you know, I want to get this perspective from someone that lives in another country. And Canada is so close to America. It gives you a very clear difference between the two and where someone might, I mean, because some of our audience may go and, hey man, when this goes, I got friends in Canada, I'm going to Canada. Then of course you might go, maybe not, you know, so I want to, it's in that kind, we got plenty of time, so we'll relax on this, we're going to get to some of the good issues, but I want to make sure that we understand your perspective at the end of the road in Canada. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and in our second hour, we have Wendy McElroy from the Great White North, eh? And I tell you, you know, we got an anarchist, libertarian, freedom-oriented feminist that's willing to give equal rights to men. That's very nice of Wendy. Thank you. Because we need them. Because it's gone way, the pendulum's swinging.
And that's not nice of me, Ernest. You got them. Yours by right.
Thank you. I stand corrected. Now, one thing I do want to make sure that we get into, and I'm glad we took the time to make sure the audience gets to know your perspective a little bit and where you're at. But you have edited and written for so many publications and done so many things. I highlight the ones you're most proud of.
What I'm most proud of? The documentaries. I wrote for a company called Knowledge Products in Nashville, Tennessee. Maybe I'm not most proud of them. Maybe I just had the most fun there. They were recorded by George C. Scott and Harry Reasoner.
Cronkite.
Yeah, Cronkite, yeah. And they were. It was just a lot of fun, very creative. And in terms of the one work I'm proudest of, maybe Liberty for Women. And even though it's not my voice all the way through, because it's an anthology, I thought it was, when I did that, I thought, okay, I've now said everything I want to say on feminism. Of course, men's rights came along, and I had to revise that estimate and decide that there's a whole different field of things to address. But Liberty for Women is probably, I felt a real sense of completion.
I am very interested in how it would be that you were tagged as a feminist. Why? How did that even happen? I mean, did you do that yourself, or did
Yes. Feminism, its roots are in classical liberalism. Mary Wollstonecraft, its roots in America are in abolitionism, the anti-slavery movement. That's the first place that feminism as a self-conscious movement arose. And it arose when women stood up, women who were working in abolitionism, stood up and said, wait a minute, are we working only for the rights of black men? Or are we not working for the rights of black women? And, gee.
And white women.
Women themselves. And they basically were very natural rights. They were grounded in the idea of equality for men and women. They weren't antagonistic to men. They worked beside men. And it was a wonderful tradition. And that's where feminism came from and went very badly wrong. It basically became a movement of privilege rather than of equality. And if we want, it's not merely that I'm saying, you know, gee, we have to slap women back because they're too privileged. I'm saying that it hurts women to be privileged.
You know, that is something that, as you look throughout history and the effect of this kind of thing, it's like it was done intentionally. You know, there was this this sense of entitlement is not just limited to whether you're a woman or black or anything else, you know, social, sexual orientation, any of that. They want to use these issues to instill the concept that you need government to protect certain rights as opposed to human rights. And they want to chop you up into these groups, but the smallest minority is the individual, and they never address that.
Well, you get into the idea of rights versus entitlement, and that's what you're talking about when you say use rights in order to get privileges. And, yeah, groups have done that all along. It's almost a hackneyed. When a revolution comes along, the people who are fighting for freedom become the new established power. And that's what's happened with women. Basically, they have become to a position of entitlement. It's the idea of a slave and a slave owner, if you look at the idea of entitlement and the person providing the funding and such for entitlement. And there's a very interesting argument that was given during abolitionism that said that slavery, if you look at entitlement and the privilege of women versus men, slavery hurts the slave owner as well as the slave. Of course, it hurts the slave more, but it also hurts the slave owner because you relinquish your soul to some degree. You relinquish your humanity. You relinquish your reason and your sense of compassion and fairness.
Well, it's like when you have someone that's tortured, and then there's the person torturing them. To think that they're not affected negatively by that is just to be naive.
It's not to forgive them for the torture. It's not to forgive them for the privilege. But it's saying, look, this is objectively bad for you. This is an unhealthy social situation, and it's unhealthy for you individually. And so equality and universality of rights is basically where I'm coming from.
Well, this is, and I'm glad we've got to this point, because I wanted to get, this is a really good foundation for what I want to talk about with you.
Good.
Your writing is so fresh, and it's just so to the point, and it's so, things that I enjoy putting it up. It makes me look good on Freedom's Phoenix. And the one thing that I want to ask you is, from your perspective outside the country a little bit, and all we've talked about, do you feel a revolution coming on that is it just cultural, social, real? Is there violent? How do you see our society sustaining itself, the path it's going?
I don't see America sustaining itself as it has in the past. I do not know what's going to happen. There is going to be some tipping point in America. I'm sitting outside America looking in, and my family's there, and my God, I wish you well. But a lot of friends that I have, you've mentioned, people may look upon Canada or Argentina or Mexico or wherever. As I mentioned Argentina, because Doug Casey, another friend of mine, is telling everyone from America, go to Argentina. There is a militarism that has gone from throughout the society right now, which does not exist in the rest of the world. I mean, other than in totalitarian countries. One of the things about Canada that's different than the States is society is not military. They don't want to take over anywhere. The police are not militarized. There's no anti-immigration. There's no xenophobia. Canada is basically going over recruiting people to come to Canada and fill jobs. The atmosphere is so different, and you don't know that unless you can look from the outside inward. I think there is a tipping point coming. I see more and more violence. I see the police brutalization is just increasing tremendously. And I do believe that, I don't believe people on CNN when they say that the recession's over. It's not. I think that probably the recession's going to really get depression is really going to get started in the third quarter of 2010.
Yeah, when the commercial real estate starts to hit the books, I ain't got to that part yet. And that includes a bunch of insurance companies and portfolios of large corporations that have blah, 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 blah. That ain't got going yet. So we talk about that quite a bit on the show, and we have a lot of stuff. And then you mentioned Doug Casey. Casey Research is researchers put a lot of good work up on Freedom's Phoenix. Matter of fact, right now, David Galan, he's got a piece up there. And when I just skimmed through it. I haven't been able to finish it yet. It just came up, and he's talking about he was in Denver, at a summit up there doing something. They went and did a little golf, and they come back to a neighborhood, and they got police officers in there, side view mirrors coming up, walking up to, we had the graphic there. You walking up to the car, and you know they're there to collect more money. You know, they're just, you know, here they come. It's a King's Men, and this is happening all over the country here in the United States, that you have guys with shiny badges with guns that are going to be extracting as much money from you as they can. So Doug's saying, hey, man, you know, we got to go somewhere else. And he's out in the lone prairie of Argentina building a six-star resort with home lots. And, I don't know, a couple hundred of his most richest friends can come down there and chill. Well, you know, we're all keeping an eye out for where we need to go. But we'll be right back with Wendy McElroy, and we'll talk about the fate of the United States again in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're back in the saddle again here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock and Wendy McElroy. And one thing, you know, we're talking about, the end is nigh. It's the greatest depression, and you look at any number, and it's math. You know, here it comes. But you see evidence of this in a lot of different ways. Like you have, you know, the ramifications of these things going on, and all of a sudden you got stories that we have on Freedom's Phoenix right now. Cattle rustling in Texas has gone up three times since last year. You know, this might be something to worry about in Canada there. You know, it starts getting bad, all of a sudden you got cattle rustling. You know, then, and that's a serious issue. That's somebody's property. And they're worried about people just going, they're going, you know what? We don't need to go hunting. We don't need to get a ticket for an elk. We just go over and get one of them cows and put it in the trailer. And this is, you know, threefold over the previous year. Now we have this one story. I want to get your comment on this, Wendy. Everyone in Britain could be given a personal carbon allowance. It would involve people being issued a unique number, which they would hand over when purchasing products that contribute to their carbon footprint, such as fuel, airline tickets, electricity. Is this, I mean, it used to seem so fantasy. You know, just even a few years ago, and now it's like, you know, it's not if, it's when.
No, it Britain basically has become Orwellian. I mean, Orwell was a Brit, and you know, he was just before his time. I was reading two stories I was reading in the news today. A woman in Britain was given a huge fine for littering because she fed the ducks. Not escape the law because he was 1 year younger than the law allowed you to accuse, to charge anyone with anything. So her son escaped the charge. The other thing is that they are monitoring every single email for 1 year. They are keeping, ISPs are required to keep all data about email and telecommunications. And any government agency can, it's now the law, without warrant, can access them. The thing that's troubling about the UK is that the UK, you ask about Canada and the United States relationship. One of the things that happens between Canada and the United States, you look in trends politically in the United States, and you say 10, 15 years from now, that will probably hit Canada. You look at the UK and the United States, and you say it's not even 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it's about 5 years.
Two or three right now, because everything's happening at internet speed. You look at the UK and you say, ah, how long until the United States?
Oh, well, I V for Vendetta was about Britain, but, you know, we had a viewing party here on the 5th. You know, this is it's always where it winds up going, though, throughout history. I it really hit me when just recently I understood why, you know, you call it revolution. It just keeps coming around. You go through these different stages, and eventually you have a revolution between the ears first. I mean, it happened here before. I would think that the world would look at America and go, I don't know, they still have a lot of guns. Do we really got to go through this? And I'm wondering what they are counting on holding it. And I don't really, I hope that it's not going to be a lot of violence. I think it may not, for a lot of reasons. I think we're just, unless it just gets to where it's a hunger thing. But I am of the opinion that Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged is more likely to be the more what people are going to do rather than, say, Unintended Consequences by John Ross. And the Atlas Shrugged scenario is just basically the productive people that are being sapped, you know, everything that they do, everything that they contribute, everything that they produce, everything that they accumulate is just taken and redistributed. And they finally said, I'm just not playing anymore. I'm going to go live in the, you know, Wendy's backyard up in Canada.
I hope you're right. I really do. And as a matter of fact, a number of friends of mine have moved to Canada recently. And I think this is a very unreported, the expat, you know, phenomenon is very underreported in the United States, where people are just quietly leaving. Because, for one thing, if you want to leave, it's overwhelmingly to your benefit to be quiet about it. So it's not an obvious phenomenon, but many, many people are just quietly leaving. And it is, whether or not it's that the wealth comes from productivity or from parasitism, I don't know, but it's usually the wealthy that go first, the ones who have something to protect.
Everyone that I know that, well, I have the good fortune of coming in contact with a lot of people that have resources. A lot of it has come from our Freedom Summit. The Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. We have Dr. Paul, the first weekend in December is when we're having the Thursday night. We start with a theater that we rented by Arizona State University, where we're going to show the movie For Liberty, the documentary on the Ron Paul Revolution. And that's going to be well attended and fun, and we'll have a good time, and the filmmakers will be there making a big deal out of that. Then the next day, Dr. Paul speaks at Arizona State University, and the Campaign for Liberty will have a thing. That night on Friday, we have a pre-summit debate. That the debate, you'll like this, it is minarchy versus anarchy.
Oh! I want to take one side of it. Guess which one?
You know, can you be a little anarchist? I mean, that's not even a minarchy,
well,
bunch of communists.
Does that count as a little anarchist?
I'm sorry?
I'm 5'2". Does that count as a little anarchist?
There you go. That's what I want to hear. You know, it's the only way you can define anarchy is by, you know, how tall the person that is.
By the way, as long as you're being shameless, people should visit WendyMcElroy.com. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, please. WendyMcElroy.com. Well, I have it linked up on the archive today, too,
okay.
So you'll be able to find it. The one thing that I want to make sure that we cover is anarchism is not necessary. A lot of people will try and give you the impression that you want no law, no. Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, natural law always exists. I mean, it's called families. It's called give me an example of an anarchist society that you would feel would be, you know, something that you would support.
You know, you want to get close to something that I would lay down my political sword and walk away and live
there
my
you
life
go.
And never a constitutional republic.
I stay on the couch.
Constitutional republic would lay down my sword.
And when was the last time we had that?
Just about never, but very close to. It's what America was supposed to be based on when they called the Constitutional Convention, and then they abrogated it basically and came up with something else.
Right. Thank you very much. Alexander Hamilton, that SOB. You know?
May he be roasting as we speak.
You know, I heard the best punchline on that. They said, you know, Aaron Burr should be shot for taking so long to shoot Hamilton. You know, so I'm going, and a lot of people that understand history that go through and realize what the Constitution really was. It was a plantation they created to enslave us. The Declaration of Independence said, look, let me tell you how you recognize a good and bad government. You know, when it's defending individual rights, you know, okay, I live with that. Is that what's happening? Is that what's going on? They created, if you had the U.S. Constitution without the Bill of Rights, you might as well call it the Communist Manifesto. It was all about the power, the power, the power, the power, the power, power to regulate, power to tax, power eminent domain, yep. the power. Yep. You had Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine, and even Jefferson. They waited until he was in France. And you go, and they said, hey, man, I smell a rat. You know, Patrick Henry was 4 hours as governor of Virginia to the legislature saying, don't ratify this piece of crap. So what happened is that's how we got the Bill of Rights. It was the compromise that they made with the libertarians of the day. We're going to put the ten thou shalt nots of government on the, and Hamilton, he's got, yeah, whatever. Just give me my central government so we can tax you. And that was the first thing they did. First thing, here we go. Washington creates a standing army to go beat up Whiskey Rebellion, all those Pennsylvania guys that they go, hey, man, did we just, you know, get our freedom from a central authority taxing us? What happened? So this is what we're dealing with.
The Bill of Rights has been the saving grace of America, and it's been the shining light of America, and it has been the reason. There's been a number of things that contributing factors, but it's been the Bill of Rights.
And, you know, you have the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, and
yeah,
it's just
totally contradict the Constitution.
Right. It was a bologna sandwich.
Are in total opposition to the Constitution. And when I say a constitutional republic, I mean the Bill of Rights.
Right, because between the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence is the bologna sandwich, you know. So and a lot of people find an opportunity to really get upset when you say stuff like that. But I'm glad you're here to kind of make the distinction with me, because it's this constitutional republic. That concept is a good concept, but that's not what we have.
No.
And sure as heck is not how it's been ruled on. When you have the rights of the individual in the crosshairs of the legislative, judicial, and the executive, you know, what happens? You find yourself in a free speech zone. That's what happens. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Wendy McElroy in just a little bit. You stay right there. We'll get into some more meat in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Open up your mind and let me step inside.
Yeah, let me come inside. We're going to have a conversation on Declare Your Independence with me and Wendy McElroy. Except maybe we'll do a little bit of truth-telling here. What the heck? You know, because I want to make sure that you get to know a fantastic, a brilliant mind like Wendy's that is just, you know, taking a look at everything that is, I don't know, life. It's also America from a fresh perspective outside the country. You've lived in the United States, haven't you?
For 10 years, yes. I lived in L.A.
So, yeah, well, you got a dose right there. I mean, you're good. But the one thing that I did want to ask you about, your perspective on this World Health Organization putting the world at pandemic level number 6. We're all going to die. And then you know what they did? In their own definition, they changed it from, we just had a story on today, that they changed it from massive death and illness. They took that part out and said, well, it could be, you know, not massive death and illness and still be a pandemic. Because they wanted to give it a 6-point, their highest rating, and they gave it 6.2. Why? Is the hysteria on these viruses and this pandemic, is that infected Canada as well?
It's infected everywhere. I mean, we're talking about the World Health Organization, world, and they've redefined, you know, they've redefined what a pandemic is specifically to get to make a scare level for the H1N1. And it's crazy. It's like the last flu, panic, where more people died from the vaccine than actually died from the flu.
Well, and that's the same kind of thing that you're getting in Canada. I mean, you're seeing it on television, it's in print, it's in the newspapers.
It's kind of yes and no. I mean, there was a big study. They actually had quite a bit of H1N1 vaccine up here, and they held it off because there was a study coming out saying that if you took H1N1 vaccine, you were more if you took the regular flu vaccine, you were more likely to get H1N1, and there were conflicting studies about which was the vaccine you should get, and so they actually withheld it because people were they were in conflict over the health risks of which vaccine should be given. So there was actually quite a bit of vaccine up here, but a totally different dynamic. One of the things I'd like to return to, if you could, because you wrote
raised
a very, I think, a key question, and something that's been on my mind, is America going to erupt in violence? And you, I think I disagree with you. I don't think there's going to be an Ayn Rand scenario where people just withdraw. Even if people did withdraw, that leaves an immense population, and I think there is going to be a great deal of violence.
I do believe that there's going to be a lot of violence, and if you remember, I did preface it with, yeah, you know, except those that are hungry, you know, and when you get hungry, you know, you'll get violent, and I don't see how we're going to stop that part. I'm just wondering if it's going to be any kind of a organized violence, because the government, they don't see or able to deal with this general unrest and just this kind of riot scenario. They're looking for the militia head, Lieutenant Commander Field Marshal Fred What's-His-Face, you know, in Michigan, that's going to take on the government. And I'm going, that's not what's going to happen. You guys, they don't see it, how it's going to, it's just going to be, I think, in my opinion, it's going to be a general unrest. You know, they're going to try and clamp down. They have more guys in uniforms with M16s on corners. They're going to be more, and they're going to be at the bus stations. We've got checkpoints they're doing here in Arizona that we're fighting. They're going to, you know, start pulling people over. They're going to start getting you for contraband. It's just going to, the iron fist is going to be taken out of the velvet glove, and they're just going to start slapping you around with it. So I do see that coming. I don't know how it's going to manifest itself. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to manifest itself in a lot of ways. There's no one way. There's going to be, you touched on it, the cattle rustling going up. One small example. As people get desperate, as people believe that we live in a lawless society, as they do because the court systems are so corrupt and the police are so brutal, that has nothing to do with justice. Courts and police have nothing to do with justice anymore. As they believe that we live in an unjust, lawless society, even decent people will turn to crime. And you will see far more individual-on-individual crime. And one of the things people have to do is they've got to realize you've got to defend yourself. The police won't defend you. You've got to arm yourself. You've got to have that kind of mentality of protecting yourself and your family. I think there'll also be political, if you want to call it that, where people who are homeless, people who are unemployed, and the unemployment rate is not 10.2, it's more like 22%. Yeah. If you would take figures that are not absolutely gutted and adjusted for political means, and it will rise. I think it probably will rise to about 13% officially in the next 6 or 7 months, and that means about 27%. Unofficially, and unofficially means the real figures. You will see confrontations with people and the police because police are becoming militarized. At the G20 summit in Pittsburgh, they used for the first time sound cannons that are capable of rupturing people's eardrums as an anti-mass riot control in the hands of police. Police are being trained in military tactics against civilians on their own soil.
We saw this happening in the mid-90s, and they're doing the multi-jurisdictional task force stuff, and they're starting to federalize local law enforcement. And we were big against it because we saw where this was going. And all the conspiracists that they were going, oh, these guys are just being crazy. Oh, this New World Order thing. Oh, now you can't watch a network without them touting the New World Order. You can't watch anywhere without them advocating for a world currency. You can't watch anywhere without them saying we need to have more law enforcement and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like what you're saying. When you have a situation to where somebody is on the edge economically, emotionally, you know, they can't take it anymore. And then you got the man pulling them over, and you know what it means. It means you're not going to make the rent that month. It means you're not going to be able to feed your family. It means that you're going to get one more bit. Where is the likelihood that you're just going to take it when the officer starts doing this respect my authority jack boot on your throat thing? And it doesn't matter if it's the left jack boot or the right jack boot or the jack boot on your throat party. You're going to resist. And it's building up to that point. I see you're right. It's coming to that. But I don't see it as an organized army of whatever. You know, we're the whatever going in and we're going to take over. I don't see that. I don't think that people are going to organize. We're going to go beat up the government so we can replace it with thugs.
No, I don't believe that. I think there's far more likely a breakdown into sectionalism in the United States.
Into what ism, would you say?
Kind of a sectionalism where people kind of withdraw and
start bartering on the internet. Start Craigslist, eBay, doing, silver trading. I got chickens. I live in Central Phoenix, Wendy. I don't think you know this. I live in Central Phoenix.
That's a terrible place to live.
I'm probably...
Andrew Thomas, that's a terrible place to live.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got his own skills. I tell you, that he's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
That guy is bad. But anyway, so that's...
Paul Camacho was fun, too, real great guy.
In Central...
We had a beer with him.
Well, this is what, no. These guys are easy to make fun of. But what happens is, it's a nicer neighborhood. It's not, big. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath and little whatever. But
I've spent time in Phoenix. It's a very nice place. But
I got 6 chickens in the backyard. I got a big garden. We got all our, I got a reloading equipment. I got, this gun safe. I got, I'm good. I'm going to be right here. Or, do you have a place up north that, can I leave? And I had the representative from the Homeland Security of here in Arizona. His name was Frank Navarrete, before Napolitano left. And I had him on the radio show, and I asked him, I said, we go to red, okay, and I want to leave, or I want to stay. Government's never friendly advice. You're not going to come up and say, we'd like you to stay in your home, or we'd like you to leave, or we'd like... I go, do I get to choose? And after this discussion, you can see he wasn't winning this one. He goes, well, I'm going to give you a special pass, Ernie. So I got a special pass. Everybody else is screwed. But here, we're preparing here. We're encouraging people to start being self-sufficient. And coming from somewhere more rural, such as you are, if we're in a city, you just wring your hands and think we're toast?
No. You're never toast. You always can take care of yourself. Even in communist countries, the individual can take care of himself to some degree. What you should do is you should, it will never be easier than right now, right this moment, to get a passport, to buy a gun, to get ammunition. Do things like that right now if you haven't done them before. It will never be easier than now to do things like buy gold. Try to buy it in an untraceable place so that there's no record. Stock up your pantry with about a year's worth of food. I'm not a survivalist. I'm not trying to sit to go down that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you are. You want to survive.
Yeah, I'm a survivalist in that way, but not in a survivalist in terms of the movement survivalism, where people say we're all going to die and Russia's going to nuke us. I'm not going there. And I don't believe that infrastructure will totally collapse and things like that. I do believe that inflation will hit in 2010 very, very hard, and that people need to stock a pantry for a year.
And those that got an attic full of toilet paper, tampons, and, beans, you win, man. You get to be king. the
queen,
thing is...
Queen?
Whatever. I have all the ministry women throughout the city will come to me for their needs, And the thing is you think I'm kidding. I'm not. Things that are small are tradable because it's something... that you need. Light bulbs, thank you very much. Generators, Wendy, it was great having you on. Give out your webpage.
Thank you so much, Ernest.
Give your webpage real quick.
What?
Your webpage.
Oh, WendyMcElroy.com. Come, say Wendy.